This is Gino Geraci on 94.7 KRKS.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me. As always, we're going to try and help you answer, take your calls and answer your questions about cults and Christianity, about world religions. And joining me is Pastor Brian Wolfmuller. He is the pastor at Hope Lutheran Church. And we're talking a little bit about what happened in history this day in 1517. Matt is on the line. And before I let you go, Matt, you were asking Brian about concepts of regeneration. And Matt, forgive me, but could you please restate for the benefit of the people who've just joined us your question for Brian?
Sure. The Catholic Church uses the term regeneration to signify the supernatural infusion of what we call sanctifying grace, which is opposed to quote, actual graces, like helping graces that people receive to do good works after they've received sanctifying grace being synonymous with the divine life of the Trinity itself, infused into the soul. Like in John 17, Jesus talks about, if you love me, my Father and I will come and make our dwelling in you, basically, what it's based on. So I was just wondering, from Pastor, I forget how to pronounce the last
Brian, name. Wolfmuller.
Wolfmuller. What the Lutheran theology of regeneration is, or if there is one, because I know, I believe Luther talked about after justification, it's the analogy that he used was snow being sprinkled over a heap of dung.
Yes, snow covered with dung, but I think it might be a different context.
Uh-huh.
Luther does have a way with words. We certainly do talk about regeneration, and we'll talk about baptismal regeneration. Regeneration simply means born again, generation being birth and re being again, so born again. And the two texts that we center that on is John 3:5, Jesus' conversation with Nicodemus, and Titus 3:5, where Paul talks about the washing of regeneration, that the rebirth is connected to baptism. And we see that in Jesus' commission in Matthew 28, where he says, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, so that God's name is given to us. We're born with really marked by the devil and his name. When the Lord puts his name on us, we are adopted into his family. And this is justification. Adoption is just another way to speak of it, and it happens by faith. So we can't talk about we don't want to talk about infusion simply because the scriptures don't teach us to talk that way. More is the language of imputation, that the Lord reckons to us or speaks about us and to us in a certain way. And that his speaking is certainly reality. But
an accounting term. It has more to do with credit and debit than...
Maybe to make it a little bit more clear as my question. So a Lutheran would not say that an ontological change occurs at the moment someone is baptized in the soul.
Well, he's the Lutheran. I'll let him answer. But I have an answer for that, and that is that there is a change. There's an ontological change. By that, you mean that there is a substantive difference between the person prior to baptism and subsequent to baptism. But remember, we're talking in philosophical terms and in spiritual terms, not in substantive terms. So, I guess I'll let you speak, but in my view, it is both in Roman Catholic, at least in Roman Catholicism and Lutheranism, they share a common view that a spiritual event takes place at baptism.
Now, that's certainly true. You are born again. You are, Ezekiel speaks of, taking away the heart of stone and giving you a heart of flesh. There is something that's different. But we actually want to avoid talking about using philosophical terms like ontology, because the scriptures, again, don't teach us to speak in that language. So if we try to put a...
Unless you say ontology recapitulates philology, and that way everyone listening can be lost in our conversation. No, I'm just teasing you, Matt. I actually understand what you're meaning, and
I'm not trying to lead anyone astray, but, you know, St. Paul warns against philosophies of the world. It's just, I'm trying to put it into a theological context similar to what St. Thomas Aquinas does.
Right. And, of course, this isn't the time or the place for me to disagree with both of you, but to let you guys have a conversation. Hey, Matt, thank you for your call.
Thank you very much.
Hey, God bless you, and I really do appreciate your call. 303-873-1935. Kevin, your question for my guest. Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Gino.
Thank you for your patience. I apologize it took so long, but I wanted to get to your question.
No worries at all. Hi, Brian. If it's okay, I'd like to set up my question and then hang up so I can focus on my driving. And
sure.
So, Matt, the previous caller mentioned the book that Luther wrote called The Bondage of the Will.
Actually, I mentioned it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But that's okay.
In the beginning of that book, Luther uses some of that very interesting language that Brian mentioned that's just, you know, more insulting and amazing than we would ever hear on your show, Gino.
Uh-huh.
But then he shifts gears after insulting Erasmus to an incredible degree. He shifts gears and he begins to give him compliments. And he says, I want to compliment you, Erasmus, because you, in contrast to these other folks, have identified the real core issue that we should be talking about. And that is, it's the issue around free will versus God's sovereignty, et cetera. And then, of course, he goes on to write an entire book on the topic. And so my question is, and just a request, I'd like to get your thoughts and comments on that statement about the centrality of that particular issue and what it means for us as modern folks who are trying to understand the Reformation and so forth.
Wow. What a question. Hey, thank you. That is
thank
a fantastic
you.
Question. You know, Luther would say later in his life that he wished only two of his books remained, his Small Catechism and his treatise against Erasmus, The Bondage of the Will. It was his favorite. And he really let loose there, and it really gets to the heart of things. It is the issue of free will, but the reason why it's an issue is because there's two different understandings of man, of how we exist as sinners before God. Are we completely dead, the doctrine of what we call original sin, or is there some sort of life in us, some sort of divine life, or some sort of ability to choose or to decide for God?
And yeah, his subtitle is De Servo Arbitrio, the idea of on the enslaved will. And so even in the title, he's trying to explain what he means by that.
That's right. Because of sin, we are not free. We're slaves. We're bound to sin and to the devil and to death. And there's no way for us to escape that, to get out of it ourselves. And so there is no effort or work or act of the will that can rescue us. So now, you see, Luther in his theology is trying to do two things. He's trying to give all glory to God and comfort to sinners. Confessing the teaching of original sin, that man is completely dead in sins and trespasses, does both of those. First of all, it makes us realize that the glory and the credit for our salvation goes to God alone and to no one else. It's completely his. It's completely his act. And second, there's a great comfort in that, knowing that there's nothing that we can do to save ourselves. We have to depend completely on Christ. And with our faith and trust in him, then we have life and salvation, the forgiveness of all of our sins. And so it's right that this is really gets to the heart of things.
Hey, thank you for your call. And again, thanks for joining me. I wanted to just be able to, again, talk about this little, we might even call it a monograph, a brief history, Dr. Martin Luther, that you wrote that basically encapsulates this is sort of a primer. It's without being disrespectful, it's like an idiot's guide to Dr. Martin Luther. I mean, it's where you can capture in just a few pages, get the general gist of this great man and his contribution to history.
Yeah, if anyone's interested in this, a brief history of Martin Luther, if they'd just call the church, Hope Lutheran in Aurora, the number's 303-364-7416. And you could just leave your name and address there on the machine, and we'd be happy to send it to you to further your own studies of Luther.
For edification.
That's right.
Hey, well, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Gino. Great to be here.
Thanks for having. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the air. And again, Pastor Brian Wolfmuller, he's the pastor of Hope Lutheran Church. It's in Aurora. If you'd like more information, you can
log on to his website at www.hope-aurora.org, and I'm sure that he'd love to hear from you. And if you have any interest at all, by all means. Next year, you might think about, with a little candy, when the trick-or-treaters come to your door, put in a little brief history of Dr. Martin Luther, and steer him in the right direction.
I might do that tonight. That's a great idea.
It actually is a great idea. 303-873-1935 is the number if you want to join us on the air. And again, if you have any question about cults or Christianity or about world religions, by all means, feel free to call. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join us on the air. It's easy to do. You just pick up the phone. I know that a lot of you are making your way through traffic and you're trying to make your way home, but I'd be more than happy to take your calls. 303-873-1935. That's the number. I don't know how much time you have, but you're welcome to stay if you'd like.
Sure, if we have a couple more questions.
Sure. 303-873-1935. That's the number. You know, and understanding the history of the Protestant Church and the Reformation, it's really important that we understand that there is this big chunk of history, and that the church, as it appears in the 1500s, it just doesn't come in a vacuum, does it? It just doesn't spring out of this sort of Christian egg. There really is literally hundreds of years of both dogma and doctrine and tradition that has, I call them accretions or incrustations. It's a geologic term that describes a mineralization process where layer after layer after layer gets attached.
Yeah, the church was certainly an institution in Luther's time, and it had a tremendous amount of authority, not just in itself, in the church, but also in society, in the world. It was a monolithic monster. Luther really bears the brunt of it in his rebellion of it. Now, Luther doesn't see what he's doing is trying to cast off any sort of political structure or anything. He's really only interested in theology. In fact, he's a doctor of theology. That's what he's been given by the Lord as his vocation, as his calling, as his duty. And so that's his what he's really interested
in. And even that expression, a doctor of theology, that might mean something different in the here and the now. But in the 1500s, when Dr. Martin Luther is a doctor of theology, that gives him certain rights and freedoms that not everybody had.
Yeah, he had the authority to publish. In fact, he writes the 95 Theses because he's a doctor of theology. You can call for a disputation, this sort of thing. Tetzel, his opponent, wasn't a doctor of theology, so he couldn't publish against him. So as soon as Luther starts criticizing him, you can bet that a doctorate is on its way from Rome to Tetzel so he can dispute with Luther.
And it's hard for me to not just only understand that, but to recognize the fragility of the circumstance, because here's what we know. Most human beings struggled educationally to go through that process of being a doctorate, and to then receive one just so you can argue with Luther seems to truly diminish the reality of what that degree meant.
It's true.
We got another call. We'll take the call when we come back. This is Gino Geraci. You're listening to Denver's Christian Station, 94.7 KRKS. Brian, we'll get right to your call when we return.
Now, real-time traffic on Denver's Christian Station, 94.7 KRKS.
Still seeing a pretty active rush hour. We have a problem in the Greenwood Village area. The right lane blocked northbound 2504 Orchard is backed up all the way to C-470. It's in the cleanup stages. They had three lanes blocked. Now it's down to one, so it is getting better. Also, a stall off to the shoulder, northbound 25 at 38th, and two others off the freeway, eastbound Iowa and Peoria, the other one 31st and Blake. For the best selection of market-fresh produce in town, just head to your neighborhood King Supers. This week, don't miss asparagus at $1.99 a pound. King Supers, right store, right price. I'm Joel and Aaron, Denver's Christian Station, KRKS.
Hi, this is Bill, and I'm here with Tim Bennett from Basis Point Home Loans. Tim, what's the good word this week?
Bill, interest rates are holding at near record lows. Now is the time to turn that high-risk, adjustable-rate mortgage, that ARM, into a fixed-rate home loan with rates as low as 5.75%.
Tim, let's go to the phones.
Hello, Tim. This is Rob from Highlands Ranch, and I was wondering, is it true that mortgage brokers now have to be licensed in the state of Colorado?
Great question, Rob. Beginning January 1st of next year, all mortgage brokers must be individually licensed in the state of Colorado. Our team at Basis Point Home Loans were fully licensed on October 1st. Come January, it's going to be a violation of Colorado law to perform any activities as a mortgage broker without that license. Rob, you wouldn't go to a doctor, a lawyer, or a CPA who didn't have the proper licenses, right? Why on earth would someone trust the financing of their most valued possession, their home, to someone who wasn't properly licensed?
Call Basis Point Home Loans at 800-400-1441. That's 800-400-1441. The Colorado licensed mortgage expert.
From the studios of Big Idea, it's Gideon, Tuba Warrior, a VeggieTales adventure based on a legendary biblical story. When God picks a tuba-playing cucumber to lead his people into battle, you just gotta ask, are you sure?
We're outnumbered by more than 10 to 1.
Yeah, point.
But to command an army,
join God's army. Get a free flashlight.
Gideon's gonna have to believe.
What kind of a sign do you need before you'll trust God? Do you want time to go backwards? Mountains to fall down? Talking vegetables to tell Bible stories?
Gideon's faith in God and a rockin' marching band would save his people.
We will defeat the Midianites with our horns and flashlights.
Gideon, Tuba Warrior, marching on to DVD this November.
Holy mackerel, that was cool!
I didn't really know much about Gideon before this. I knew that he left Bibles in hotel rooms, but that's about it.
VeggieTales, Sunday morning values, Saturday morning fun.
94.7
KRKS.
Yes, the holidays are right around the corner again. Hi, Dan Ciccone, Dunright Kitchens and Baths. I know you've put off that kitchen or bath remodel, and now you think it's just too late to get it before the holidays. Wrong. You can still get it done, but you've got to get motivated. And on that subject, how about saving up to $1,200? We'll make your kitchen look brand sparkling new with Dunright's very own solid wood resurfacing program, or replace your kitchen with our own custom-built cabinetry, along with Dunright's hand-built solid surface, granite tile, or laminate countertops. And, of course, we'll put that dream bathroom renovation within your reach as well. But you got to get moving. Call now and you'll save up to $1,200 on all full kitchen or bath projects. And you can save even more on certain installation dates. For details, call 303-722-2295, 800-362-8370, or visit us at DunrightKitchens.com and arrange a no-cost in-home estimate. You have my word. We'll treat you right at Dunright.
The China Resource Center needs your financial support. Please call them at 303-322-8884. That's 303-332-8884. Or visit them at ChinaResourceCenter.org.
This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me, my guest. Brian Wolfmuller, he is the pastor of Hope Lutheran Church. 303-873-1935. Want to give you an opportunity to talk with Brian, ask questions that I don't necessarily get to answer. Brian, God bless you. Welcome to the program. Your question for my guest. Hi, Brian. Hello, Brian. Brian, are you there?
Hello, this is Brian talking to Brian.
Hey, thank you so much.
Hey, the reason why I called was my brother pursued friendships and information from the Messianic Jewish community, and some of them were not Messianic Jews, but recently he's got a Messianic Jewish friend who said one of the last books that Martin Luther wrote was a slam against the Jews because he was just frustrated with them. They wouldn't turn to Christianity, and the book statement something about turning the young people into laborers and getting rid of the older people and the established ones through, you know, killing them off, was used as Hitler used that to fuel his purpose. And what I wanted to know is, I have not read the book. I do not know the validity of the history there. I just want to know, did Martin Luther become mentally ill in his latter years and write something stupid like that, or what do you know?
Well, let's give him an opportunity to respond. Sure. Yeah. In 1546, Martin Luther did, in one of his last writings, wrote on the Jews and their lies.
Right, that's the name of the book.
Now, 20 years before, he had written a little tract called That Jesus Was Christ Was Born of the Jews, and in that he advocated continuing to speak the gospel to the Jewish community, that they would receive it and themselves become Christians. In fact, Luther was convinced that the reason why the Jews had not converted to Christianity was because the gospel had been so muddled by the Catholic Church that they had not heard of God's grace.
Yes.
Now, he did, 20 years later, become very frustrated, and he wrote this little tract on the Jews and their lies. There's and he does say some things in there that should not be defended. We let them stand as really terrible statements. I do not believe. In fact, I'm almost sure that Luther never advocated the killing of anyone. He knew that the sword did not belong to
right.
the church.
And let me help put this in context for you, even though I'm not a Lutheran. Ready?
Yes.
Martin Luther wrote early on in his career. He wrote, "The Jews are blood relations of our Lord. If it were proper to boast of flesh and blood, then Jews belong more to Christ than we. I beg, therefore, my dear Papist," he's speaking to the Roman Catholic, "I beg, therefore, my dear Papist, if you become tired of abusing me as a heretic, that you begin to revile me as a Jew."
Mm.
Now, the reason why I'm giving you that quote isn't to soften the very problematic words that Luther said, but to think of them in a historical context.
Look, Luther's
in other words, he applauds the Jews' resistance of Roman Catholicism.
Well, that's true. Mm-hmm. Luther was interested always in the gospel and in Jesus.
Yeah.
And that was his central article. Now, the problem is we have this idea of anti-Semitism, which really comes from Darwin, this idea of evolutions being contained in race. And so racism then is a byproduct of really social Darwinism, this understanding. For Luther, to be Jewish had nothing to do with race. Race was far from his mind. In fact, if he's racist against anyone, it's against the Germans. He called the Germans lazy, fat. It's a wonder that the gospel is preached to them. But he did not consider the Jews to be a race. He considered it a church, a doctrine, a teaching. And a teaching that rejected Jesus. That was the problem for Luther, that the Jews refused to confess that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. It happened in Jesus' own day, and it happened in Luther's day as well. So Luther saw the Jews as, well, it was a public crime in Luther's day to blaspheme, and this is certainly blasphemy, to say that the Jews, to say that Jesus is not God's Son. Now, blasphemy is no longer a public crime in our day, and so these things could never be spoken of in our day and ought not to be spoken.
Mm-hmm.
But Luther criticizes Judaism like we might, for example, criticize Islam, that it rejects the Holy Trinity and has a bad doctrine and therefore has no gospel, and so it should be rejected as a theology, not as a race.
Right. Now, well, thank you for being so thorough. Now, I don't know, did he say then to remove the older ones from positions of power or responsibility or anything like that?
Luther said at one point that he would rather have a wise Turk than a foolish Christian as his emperor. And so Luther had this distinction between the two governments, church and state. And so that doesn't seem to flow with what Luther had said earlier. He did say things like their books ought to be burned, which, again, you see that's a reaction to the bad theology.
Right, and also you've got to understand, again, the context in which his book is picked up by Nazis in the 1930s.
Yeah.
Now, again, he does say things like, you know, he did not call them Abraham's children, but also a brood of vipers. That's Matthew 3:7.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was too insulting for the noble blood and race of Christ, and they declared he as a demon. In other words, Jesus calls them a brood of vipers.
Mm-hmm.
The Jews accuse Jesus of being demonically possessed.
Yeah.
And here's what Jesus does. Mm-hmm. He says, "You do me ill." In other words, he basically says, "You're making a characterization of me that's unfounded."
Yeah.
Here, is it true? Their blindness and arrogance are as solid as an iron mountain. That's what he wrote.
Yeah.
It's true. If you read Martin Luther, The Jews and Their Lies,
yeah,
and then read the book of Hebrews, and then reread Martin Luther, the Jews, and their lies.
Yeah.
It isn't going to have the same insidious connotations that National Socialists bring to the table as some sort of conspiratorial menace.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, do we as Christians believe that the Jews are lost? Yes. Do we believe in dual covenants, that God has one plan for the Jew and another plan for the Gentile? Martin Luther, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, if Martin Luther were sitting at the table and I asked him, how is a person saved, either Jew or Gentile? Is there one way for a Jew to be saved and another way for a Gentile to be saved? What would he say?
No, sir. Jesus is the only way.
Yes.
He alone is the way to heaven. I am the way and the truth and the life, and there's no other Father but by me.
Hey, thank you for your call.
Yeah, thank you for your thoroughness in answering the question.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join us on the air. 303-873-1935. Craig, God bless you. Welcome to the program. Your question for my guest. Hi, Craig. Welcome, Craig. Is Craig gone, Isaac?
I'm here. It takes a while for it to beat me over.
Yeah, that's so that you can't cuss me out. I can hit a button and make you go away. No, I'm just kidding. Craig, what your question for my guest?
I don't know. I just turned on the radio about 10 minutes ago, so I haven't even gathered exactly who your guest is and what he's talking about. I just know that you guys are talking about Martin Luther and the Reformation.
Yeah, Pastor Brian Wolfmuller, he is my guest. He's the pastor of Hope Lutheran Church. And we happened in the earlier hour to be talking about what great thing took place on this day in history. Remember, Martin Luther tacked the 95 thesis on the Wittenberg door.
Exactly.
Which is eventually going to unfold and lead to this thing called the Protestant Reformation. But what we're trying to do is think about what Luther did, the contribution that he made, and think about it in its historical context.
Okay, well, I think my question is within the context of your conversation then.
Okay.
I have a Roman Catholic friend at work, and just today, because of this day in history, we were talking about the Reformation, and his critique of Protestantism, one of his critiques is that there are so many different Protestant denominations, you know, some 30,000 or whatever, and they do disagree on many different things, many different doctrines, and his take is that how does a Protestant know for sure that they're exegeting the true meaning of that God wants us to have?
That's a fair question, and I want to take it one step at a time, okay, Craig? With that question, we'll begin with that, and if you have more, I'll give you a chance to maybe give a couple more. The way that I would put this is the criticism, Protestant, you exchanged one pope for 30,000 popes.
Yes, this is a question of authority, really, and it isn't really true that the Roman Catholic Church is the huge monolith that they present themselves to. There is really only one unifying teaching in the Roman Catholic Church, and that is submission to the Pope. And under that umbrella, you have 30, 40, 50,000 different teachings as well. So the splintered nature of the Protestant Church is reflected in the splintered nature of the Catholic Church, too.
And here's what else I would point out to your friend, Craig. Number one, that the Roman Catholic Church, just like what Brian said, isn't quite as unified as they lead you to believe. And number two, the Protestant Church isn't quite as splintered as he might lead you to believe. Because on the essentials, we all agree. Remember, even in Roman Catholicism, when we talk about the Apostles' Creed, or we talk about the Nicene Creed, or we talk about the Creed of Chalcedon, and we say, we believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, of all things visible and invisible. We believe that Jesus is the only begotten Son, God of God, true God of true God, begotten, not made, one with the Father. So as we go down the laundry list of what's been called historical biblical Christianity, here's the right way to respond. Roman Catholics have an authority, the Pope. Protestants have an authority. It's called the Bible. Do Roman Catholics disagree about what the Pope says? Yes. Do Protestants disagree about the Bible? Yes, but we'll talk more when we come back. You hold on.
94.7 KRKS.